Welcome, Black Hollywood Live fans. On today's Fit Club, we talk the Dirty Dozen, Life Extension, and more with Olympic medalist and actor Danelle Leyva. Stay tuned for more.
You're tuned into Black Hollywood Live, Fit Club.
What's up, Fit Clubbers? We are back and chilling out to a little Khalid. I love it. We are joined by actor, Olympic medalist, Danelle Leyva. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you guys for having me.
Really appreciate it. Again, guys, my name is Shaka Smith. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat at Shaka Strong. And I'm joined by my co-host.
What's up, guys? My name is TK Trinidad. You can find me on everything at TK Trinidad.
And Danelle, where can they find you?
Instagram, Twitter,
like at the club,
home address.
Honestly, you can find me at home playing video games or watching Hulu with my girlfriend, but also on social media, Instagram and Twitter. It's Danelle J. Leyva, all one word.
Half the women just tuned out when you said girlfriend. thanks for killing it. Left it to the end, but I digress.
And if you guys are in the chat, we appreciate you being there. We'll be responding to your comments and questions if you have any. That'd be awesome. But yeah, let's kick it off with the first story. Latest in breaking, the 2018 Dirty Dozen has been released. The Dirty Dozen is a list of the worst fruits and vegetables according to their contamination with pesticides.
I got scared. I thought I was going to be on the list.
You're like,
oh, boy. Oh, there's so many. I'm going to leave it alone.
It was a softball.
Yeah, that was
She's
a
like,
softball.
I'm not going to let that one go. But topping the list is strawberries. Also spinach, nectarines, apples. Grapes. So really, I mean, the thing is bio-organic here.
Jesus. Spinach?
Yeah, spinach. Are you surprised by some of this?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, TK shakes her head.
No, because, if you buy it in the grocery store, it's still kind of bad. But it's like, if somebody's preparing it for you, that's why, like, when I go out and the fruit is just chilling.
Yeah.
And it's just, people can breathe on it. It's very porous.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with spinach. So I'm not surprised because, like, I've always been kind of, like, if somebody hands me an orange and it's already cut up, like, I don't
I was surprised by the nectarine because the nectarine has a skin.
Yeah, it's not. And it's a very thin skin.
And rounding out the Dirty Dozen are, like, celery and potatoes, which I would have thought, you know, wouldn't have been so bad.
I feel like the potatoes makes a little more sense because it is, like, a root vegetable, so I guess that would make a little more sense. But, like, you're right. Like, nectarine, things that have, like,
Some of the skin you would think it's enough. And guess what? They wash and peel these fruits and vegetables because they want to mimic what the average consumer does.
Right.
I don't know if I want to know all of this information. Like, already, she has already gotten in my head.
I know. I don't even want to know anymore.
The key is to just buy organic.
Right.
Like, so at the end of the day, it's like that's a way you can avoid it is buying organic. And they actually added the 13th hot peppers, which was really disappointing because I love hot peppers. And I never even think about really buying organic.
Well, I think, too, with that is even if you buy organic, you're still going to get some type of thing floating around.
Well, not pesticides, though. So this is like measuring the pesticides. And so that's what I'm really trying to avoid.
Right.
So what were you going to say that they washed them with?
No, they washed and peeled them as if, you know, because normally we all just wash our vegetables and fruit. So they did that in the study, too. So they're finding that the pesticides are still on there, even with doing it as normal Americans would do.
Yeah.
So the best way, if you're going to buy these and they're not going to buy organic, you need to rinse them for a full 30 seconds.
Okay.
And they also found that if you soak them in baking soda and water. That's sort of the best way to get rid of it.
I like that. That's good.
But, like, really tedious. Like, I just want to grab my fruit and stuff. exactly. Get to it.
I suppose.
I guess the positive side of it was that there's a clean 15, and topping the list for the clean 15 are avocados. Yeah. So that's like
thicker
my
skin.
Yeah. But that is one of my go to's these days. Also on the list was pineapple, cabbage, onions, papayas, asparagus. So not some of the fun stuff, but hey, if you eat it, you're in good shape.
Yeah. The asparagus is still, even though there's no official like layer on top of it, still kind of a harder vegetable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So, but when you were training, like, how are you responding to, I guess, some of these new food rules that kind of pop up every day in terms of this is organic or this is the best today or the best tomorrow? How are you able to kind of navigate that?
Well, to be completely honest with you, this is the first time I've ever heard of new food rules or anything. Because especially when I was training, I really didn't worry about any of that.
Yeah.
You know, like, they're a lot more strict for the women's gymnastics, for sure. Because, obviously, you know, people, we already know the culture and how awful it was for the women. But anyways, let's not talk about that now. So honestly, I would never really worry about it. I just ate whatever I wanted in moderation, of course, because if I started feeling too heavy, I would cut down, or if I didn't feel enough energy, I would, you know, eat more.
So there was never sort of like, oh, this new superfood is out. Let me start filling my diet with like tart cherries or, you know.
No, definitely not.
Well, go ahead. What were you going to say?
I was just going to say, especially like being an athlete, there is this thing that like, there's a lot of superstition that goes into like being an athlete. And there's like a lot of things that like, you're just like, well, I didn't do this last time, so I don't
want you don't want to change anything.
Change your routine.
Yeah.
What were you going to say?
I find like the older athletes are the ones that get more strict with their diet.
Yeah.
But when you're like younger, because you said you started when you're, well, we looked up and said you started when you're 16. Like that period of...
I started when I was 3.
So you started when you were 3.
Yeah.
So that period of time until you retired was the time, like, I remember when I was running track, I was eating like Caesar's pizza.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know what I'm saying? So your body, your metabolism is so high that you can afford to eat junk. Like Usain Bolt was eating chicken McNuggets during the Olympics.
Yeah. I think we're getting a little bit of that Tom Brady effect where the younger athletes are now going, let me clean up my diet so that I can have this really long career.
Right.
For sure.
Like even, well, I know Venus did it because of, she had the syndrome, but she went vegan.
But she was so 30.
Yeah. But then other younger athletes started doing it. So I didn't know if like some of that affects or leaks into like the Olympic Village. Or, you know, other Olympians. Or...
Well, I mean, to be completely honest, it was really just more so me because my teammates on that were on the Olympic team, they were eating like super clean. You know, they were like really watching what they were eating and stuff. But like I wasn't just because I didn't – like I guess I just kind of knew – also being Hispanic, we eat a lot of different things. So we range our food choices from like vegetables to like – deep fried almost, you know? So there's a lot of stuff that I knew, like, okay, I'm going to stay away from this or I'm going to eat more of that. And I feel like that kind of helped me not worry about it. Also, we were at the Olympics. I didn't want any, like, one more thing to have to worry about.
To think about, Yeah.
I'm sure you weren't eating, like, French fries and
fried
chicken every night or something like that.
Yeah, I was going to say, growing up, how was your diet? Because you said you were homeschooled, so were most of your foods just, like, made and prepared in the home?
Yeah, absolutely.
You were avoiding the process for the most part.
Right, exactly. So it was like, I like rarely ate like fast food ever. Yeah.
Well, I'm guessing your mom cooked your meals and stuff like that? Or
my mom would cook every once in a while. Or actually sometimes we would buy from restaurants, but like from Cuban restaurants or like Hispanic restaurants. Yeah. So it was like still like rice, beans, chicken, steak,
that home cooked.
Like that.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the same in like with West Indian homes too. Like we didn't really, my grandmother cooked our meals pretty much every day.
Yeah, I think that's why we probably got away with a lot more in terms of eating a lot and different ranges of food because it wasn't processed. You weren't getting all that junk all the time.
Exactly. McDonald's was a treat. It wasn't a daily thing.
Exactly.
And in that same vein, we had this new study coming out from the Journal of Cell Metabolism talking about cutting down calories for life extension. Have you guys heard of this before?
I haven't.
No, but it makes sense in the long run because I was talking to somebody today because I'm also, you know, vegetarian too, but I was talking with somebody today about like Roscoe's, right?
Yeah.
So Roscoe's, like back in the day, I used to do, I think it's called the Carol Seat. If you guys haven't been to Roscoe's, you need to go to Roscoe's. But it's like a Carol Seat and it was two waffles, chicken breasts, and then I'd add a wing and then cornbread.
Oh.
That's what I had.
That sounds so good.
But I can't even, one, I can't even physically eat that anymore.
Yeah.
And two, like, just kill me now. Yeah. So it's like, if I were to go there, I would have like half a waffle naturally, because naturally because my metabolism was not as fast as it was back then, it's kind of like almost a switch. So I'd have like half a waffle and I might have like a chicken wing and stuff like that.
Mm.
And it's like my body can't even eat that food, the amount of food that I was having before. And if you stay on top of it, it kind of makes sense that you do it naturally.
Yeah. And so it can extend your life just for like past a decade.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they're finding out, in animal studies, they found that 25% reduction was effective. So they did the same study in humans, but I love it because none of the people were able to stick to 25% reduction in calories.
Were they in America?
But they averaged, but they averaged 15%. They averaged 15%, but the good news was they actually found a significant increase from the 15%.
Right.
So you don't have to go that far in terms of your reduction for calories. And they looked at the biomarkers of aging.
Mm.
Oxidative stress, looked at it in the urine, as well as different markers that they gauged against people that were centenarians, 100 years old, 90 years old. And they found that both markers were reduced. And so it looks like if you cut your calories by 15%, not only will you lose weight, as participants lost 20 pounds the first year and maintained it for the second year, that you'll actually be able to extend your life.
Wow, that's
important. Is it worth it?
I mean, it feels like... it feels like some of these studies are... common sense, like you'd feel like when you were a kid, you were playing more, right?
Yeah, yeah.
If you're an adult and you work 9 to 5, yeah, you're no longer as active. So therefore, it would behoove you to maintain, not even like a model figure, just to maintain, you right, know, being healthy,
yeah,
to not eat as many calories because you're not going to be burning them.
Yeah.
So it just seems like, I get it if you were not trained in that, or you, you know, weren't in athletics, right, or, yeah, you know, it wasn't around your family. I get where, like, it seems like a new study, but to me it's just like...
But at, right, least, but at least you have a number to tie to it. Because, yeah, you know, before you're like, you know, what's the most effective way? Do, right, I go 1,000 calories? But use your baseline for what you normally eat and, mm-hmm, cut it by 15%, and that's, mm-hmm, where you know you can kind of live for a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Or it's just so funny, like piggybacking off of what you said, I was literally about to say, like, maybe I'm biased because I was an athlete,
mm-hmm, yeah,
but, like... It's really easy to also maintain the calorie count low if you just maintain a specific type of exercise. It doesn't, yeah, have to be an Olympic sport. Yeah. It's just like something, you know,
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I retired almost 2 years ago now, and my girlfriend goes to UCLA, so I'm there like all the time. And I actually play soccer like 3-4 times a week with, mm-hmm, like the faculty and staff. And these are like older men, yeah, you know, mm-hmm, and they're out there and they're like running for an hour, and it's a lot of fun, and you can see like the difference between these guys and just like regular guys.
Mm-hmm. So you haven't seen like a metabolic drop off, because I know for me the first year after I wasn't playing water polo anymore, that was a tough year, because, mm-hmm, all of a sudden your activity level that was like you're twice a day, and you know, and you could eat whatever you want, so you don't really change your eating habit, yeah, but, right, all of a sudden, exactly, you're not doing twice a day.
Yeah. And people warn you, but you just always think, it's almost like...
Because you've done it your entire, yeah, life.
It's almost, so, like you're Superman, and you've been Superman this whole, yeah, time, and they're like, no, once you, yeah, lose the cape, it's a wrap, and you're like, no, I've been...
Yeah, I got it. Yeah, because it's so second nature, you forget that that is the reason you're in such, yeah, good shape. So did you find there was like... Oh man, I got to be a little bit tighter with my diet here.
I'm not gonna lie, I did get like really paranoid.
Yeah.
Because like I knew, like,
yeah,
dude, I would train like 6 to 8 hours a, yeah, day almost, right?
There's nothing you could eat that's gonna touch your body.
But, yeah, yeah.
Right. So like when I retired, I was like, okay, I need to like work out a bunch every single day as much as I can.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I need to cut down on what I eat, because like I would eat similar to like there was the portions that I would eat was insane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Insane. And now, like, even if I tried, I would throw up, yeah, for sure.
I think we all wish that we can maintain, like, I'm just trying to do 2 hours, like, just fit 2 workouts a day, yeah, and that's, yeah, that's my normal, right? Yeah. And it's just, like, we can't, because adulting sucks balls.
Yeah.
It's just, like, you have to...
Yes, agree. Very true.
Hashtag. You have to kind of, you know, you have to figure out what works best for you, but it's, yeah, the same thing. I think when I retired, you know, just, you know, did the same thing, and then I think, and you don't even realize it, and then I was at a cottage one time with my boyfriend at the time, and they took a picture, and I'm like, oh,
that's so bad.
Yeah, it's like, okay. Noted. Like, yeah, you know, then you kind of alter it. So
it's just so funny. I started doing so many different things. I became so much more active, which I think kind of led to me being so happy in my like post-retirement, mm-hmm, life, because like again, I would play soccer randomly when I was still training, but not much because obviously I was training, but I started playing soccer a whole bunch more. I started kind of taking these private like fighting lessons and like for like stunt fighting and stuff that. Now I like actually go to like a gym, to a Krav Maga gym.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I was going to say, so that transition is tough. So these are some of the things you did to kind of give yourself some routine after, mm-hmm,
yes,
that.
Yes, exactly, yeah, exactly. And of course, you know, like acting and stuff like that, because having to go to auditions and stuff kind of cuts down your exercise time as well. You know?
Yeah,
like,
of course.
Having to figure out, like, you know, like, how you're going to learn these lines or writing new creating new content, which is kind of what I'm doing as, mm-hmm, well. That cuts in. And like
Social media.
Has that transition been difficult from Olympian to actor? Because by the end of it, it's probably second nature for you. You're jumping on these parallel bars. And it's got to be, by now, so easy, second nature. And then you go into this room, it's sort of a new thing. As an actor, I know you're kind of out of, like...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, element.
And you can't control it. There's no control. Yeah. Whereas in sports, you know, you either train and you do your job or you don't.
But, I mean, it's interesting because, like, in a sense, you can and you can't control either side, because yeah, like in sports, like you can train a whole bunch and all of a sudden some random thing happens, mm-hmm, and yeah, then you can't control it. But I feel that the same applies for entertainment. Like you kind of can't control it, but at the same time, you can, depending on the amount of work you put in. But that's, like, everything in life, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, the transition was, I think, I'm not going to say that I was on a high, like, on a honeymoon of being retired, because, like, I still feel it, and every single day I'm more and more happy mm-hmm. with the choices that I made. Mm-hmm. I really felt like, I really feel like I'm doing exactly what I want to be doing, and every single day I get up, and even if I, like, don't have an audition or don't have anything to work on, I'm happy doing what I'm doing right now.
Yeah. And you haven't suffered from any of this sort of feedback malaise, because you get immediate feedback as a gymnast. With acting, you don't get, like, you can book the job and may not hear about it a month later, right. or you just never hear it at all.
Yes.
Yeah. So has that been different? Oh, man.
It has. It has, for sure. Luckily, I have a really good, like, support system. Yeah. Like, not only my girlfriend, or, you know, not only my girlfriend, but also, like, I have, like, really good amount of friends out here that are also actors.
Mm-hmm. Good, yeah.
And they're just, like, really honest, but really supportive, and that's kind of, like, what you need in life, I think.
Yeah,
I think after as long as you're working on, like, the little things as far as what type of actor you want to be, mm-hmm. I think once you get either, one, the adrenaline rush that you had before, because that's what transitioned me. Like, that's what I did when I did CrossFit, football, mm-hmm. all these other things, is, like, that little bit of adrenaline rush was still there that made me excited about whatever I was doing. And then you're learning something new. I think that's the great thing about being an athlete and having several years into it, and then, you know, essentially being an Olympic athlete and kind of putting in that time that you can apply to yourself. I mean, I was talking about Ronda Rousey and this whole WWE thing, and I was like, the fact that we doubted this woman, like, she made it to the Olympics out of everybody in America and came in third out of everybody in the world.
Yeah.
And then she did USC and she made it to that point. It's like, the fact that we doubt her that she didn't put in the work for that, like, how do we doubt her to put in work for something else?
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's kind of like, it's the same thing. So that's the great thing about, you know, being in athletics.
The other thing that I did also was that, like, I believe that as a human being, we never stop learning. And a person who thinks that they have reached their peak of, like, oh, I know everything,
they start dying.
They, yeah.
Yeah.
Or they're psychopaths and, you know, have, they're egomaniacal and they have, like, a serious issue.
Oh, boy.
No, but I'm serious. Yeah. You know, like, I know, I personally know people like that. So I'm saying.
Oh, wow.
Just that, like, you're always learning. And that's, like, one of the first things that I made a goal to immediately start taking acting classes and immediately start learning things about this world that I'm in now, you know, and it's really helped. I'm currently at Upright Citizen Brigade.
Oh yeah, I used to be.
And I'm taking improv classes there. I did my first show, and that adrenaline rush.
Nice.
Oh, man, that adrenaline rush. It was there for sure.
Yeah, like, you're about to go on stage, and you feel, like, almost like you're about to. When I did my first beauty pageant, I was in heels in the back, and I was like, felt like I was about to step in the Lux. Yeah. Like, that, it's definitely, and I think is this your girlfriend, or is it somebody else?
Where?
In the chat?
We have
to... No, it's not. Right. But hi.
All right, just checking.
who's in the chat?
Tangled 55.
Oh, well,
thank you. Hi, Tangled 55.
Thank you for joining us. And I was going to say, I guess it was 2011, you suffered a chin injury.
Oh, yeah, that was at World Championships. It was the last event for the all-around.
Yeah.
Last event, and if I would have hit the routine, I would have gotten, like, second or third, and I ended up hitting my chin on the bar.
But you came back and got gold for parallel bars,
right? Yeah, like 3 days later.
So has that prepared you for acting in terms of, and then how did you get through that? How do you mentally drop when, you know, things go wrong and then having to go, look, I got to get back up and got to start this next thing?
It's so funny because, like, that has, I mean, that's just one example of my career in gymnastics, but to be completely honest, my entire gymnastics career has been, you know, get down, get back up, fall down, get back up, all the time, you know, and I feel like that's a slight advantage that I may have in this world, because, like, whatever, get knocked down, get back up, it doesn't matter, you know. Another thing is the fact that being an athlete, and you guys will both know, if you do something off, they're not going to be like, hey, so maybe try it. They're just like, that was bad, do it again, or whatever, you know. Like, that's something that I'm prepared for. So if there's, like, ever a director or anything, be like, hey, that was garbage, do it again. I'd be like, all right, cool, let's do it again.
It's not an issue. You know, like, yeah.
Yeah.
whatever. You could take criticism if you had great coaches and not the ones where, you know, somebody who has talent and they're just kind of, you know, allowing them. If you had great coaches that, you know, wanted to see you excel, then you're able to take coaching well. And that's kind of a, again, exactly. I guess I'm preaching athletics too much, but it's just you learn so many little things that you don't even realize you're learning until you're out of it and you're now in the business world or you're now
and
in
now
another
it applies.
World. And now it applies and it's not an issue to you, but for some reason somebody who's, you know, they've been kissing their, you know, butt for a long time, they take issue to it when somebody's like, you should do this.
Right.
So it's like just another day in the...
It's funny. I was I was filming an audition. I was putting an audition on self-tape, and I asked a friend of mine to come over. We had met on a short film that we did, and I was like, yeah, like, would you mind helping me read? And she was like, yeah, okay, great. And she kept giving me notes, and she was like, I'm so sorry. And I was like, no, thank you. Like I need you. I need you to tell me what I'm doing. I need, you know, and she's like, okay, okay, cool. Like, I just don't want you to, I'm like, no, man, just tell me. If you see something wrong, tell me.
Because how do I grow and how do I learn? Yeah.
It's some good criticism versus something like, you know, something that you can't change. Like, okay, you're hefty. Like, well, dude, in 5 minutes, I can't do anything about that. Like,
thank you for that light note. But,
Like, looked in the mirror. I already know that. Thank you. Appreciate it. But, you know, it's something that where you can actually critique and change, then that's helpful. Exactly.
I wanted to ask you about the importance of staying prepared.
Okay.
I know, so 2016, you were an alternate to this team. So you get a silver in parallel bars and on the high bar, but you were an alternate to this team. So you almost missed out on these silvers. How did you, I guess, go about taking that role seriously? Because you don't know if you're going to make it. You have to train as if you are.
Well, it was literally what we were talking about. Get knocked down, get back up. Yeah. You know, and there's two main competitions to qualify on the Olympic team. There's the national championships and then the Olympic trials. 4 weeks before the national championships, I had an incident where one of my two family dogs, They got into a fight with each other. My mom was there, so I went in to try and separate them. Mm-hmm. And the one that I grabbed bit my leg twice.
Wow.
Mm. Right. That.
Like.
4 weeks. Yeah. 4 weeks. I literally couldn't move my foot. Like, I couldn't train at all for 2.5 weeks.
Like, what are the odds? You're just thinking to yourself, like.
Literally, the only thought, I was like, really? Now?
Yeah.
Like, not that. Yeah. Ah, dog. No, I was just like, really? Now? Yeah. Does that
happen? Call yourself
now?
A friend.
Yeah. But. But yeah, like, I can show you guys the picture. It's kind of boring. But it's just, like, the picture of me in the hospital with my leg all, like, chewed. And, like, I was smiling. I was like, hey, it's fine. It's fine. Don't worry about it. Yeah. Like, eh, it's, don't
life
worry
goes
about
on.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that kind of played a role into the fact that, like, you know, I went to nationals again. I competed with my leg wrapped. Mm-hmm. Went to the Olympic trials. I competed. Had a great competition. They didn't select me. I was like, whatever. Let's just keep going. Mm-hmm. I pretended. I imagined. I more so envisioned myself already on the Olympic team. I was like, I'm on the team. I'm on the team. Yeah. And then, again, unfortunately, like I said, you have control, but you don't have control. One of my teammates, John Roscoe, hurt his knee at the very last camp right before going to Rio.
Yeah.
Just like a week or two.
Right, and this entire time you're training with them as if you're going as well, and then...
Well, yeah, we went back. Everyone went back home to train, and then we all went to... We met up at this camp.
So while you're an alternate, you're back home training.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that optional, or you have to do that?
No, yeah, everyone kind of trains their own.
And you just keep your motivation up going.
Yeah.
Okay, anytime. Yeah. I just have to be ready regardless.
Yeah. Yeah, and exactly. I didn't even think about, like, I have to be ready. I just literally thought that I was competing. Like, I just, in my mind, I was like, I wasn't an alternate. Yeah. I was on the team and I was going to compete.
Always be prepared.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so, you know, this happens, unfortunately, at this last national team training camp. And they select me on the team. And then, you know, like you said, we go to the Olympics and I come back with two silvers.
Wow.
Now, with the Olympics in Rio, there's a whole, maybe 6 months up to it as far as living conditions and the water and all that other stuff. Did you find there are any issues with you and your teammates as far as, you know, did you guys bring your own food or did you prepare a certain way or was the Olympic Village, you know, you guys were well taken care of?
Here's my thing. So, first of all, I fell in love with Brazil. I fell in love with Rio. I fell in love with the people, with the culture, with the food. It was amazing. I can't wait to go back. My issue, though, is that it's kind of funny how a South American country has a couple problems, and we bring up all these problems, but then in London, we had problems where literally my team in the apartment building where we were staying got flooded, like pipes burst, and we had to move to a different, like completely move to a different apartment, and during the Olympics.
It's like you have years to prepare for this.
Exactly. That's my issue. There's always problems. There's always going to be, you know, like the situation, like they literally have just built an entire village for people. And there's obviously going to be issues. It's new construction. There's new construction and new buildings, and they take, like you said, years and years and years.
Yeah.
You know, I had no problems with Rio. I fell in love with it. I would actually, at some point in my life, like to maybe buy an apartment in that village, because the community that was built around it as well, it was amazing. They have a skate park. They have, like, I don't know how many little soccer, like, fields. Like tennis courts, it was beautiful. And besides, it's like right next to the beach, so
you can't go wrong, right?
Exactly. A lot of string bikinis. It's like, I'm not going to answer. I have a girlfriend.
Another subject. But you have this production company now that you started, Parallel Entertainment.
Yes.
Obviously, an ode to what you've done in, yeah. in the gymnastics world.
Yeah.
What kind of spurred this about, and what do you guys want to do with this production company?
So. I'm a really big believer of, like, making your own content as well and creating your own things and kind of, I guess, helping people as much as you would like them to help you. You know what I mean? Especially in this industry, I feel like if you pay attention to the people that are really successful, you can see that they're always in a group. Like, look at Adam Sandler's movies. It's always the same people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Same, you know, like. You always see, like, Kevin James, whatever.
Yeah.
It's always the same group. Same thing now with, like, Judd Apatow. You always see the same people.
And Issa Rae and... Exactly. Yeah,
you always see the same people. And I feel like that's the secret of this industry. You have to grow together.
Yeah.
You know, and
go on, sorry.
I was just saying, like, I feel like the people that don't see that, the people who try and just, like, grow by themselves and start, like, stepping on the people who help them get up there, stay here and then drop.
Yeah.
So, what were you going to
say? Yeah, I was saying that... now I forgot. No, I was saying that when you have people, like, growing together... no, I can't remember. It'll come back.
I like how you tried to...
Like, so I created this production company with... You know, he's my manager, but we're like, really good friends.
Yeah.
And we speak sometimes as manager and client. We speak sometimes as friends. We speak sometimes as business partners. And so we were like, hey, man, let's create this company.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were like, yeah, it's a great idea. And we have a couple things in development right now. You know, it's going well. I mean, obviously, we just opened it recently, so it's not going to be immediately successful, but nothing ever is.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's awesome. And so that what's your vision for it? What do you see 10, 20 years down the road?
Sincerely, similar to what Dwayne Johnson has done. You know,
like some rock.
You know, like $7 production. That's that's his,
and that's family. So
that's what I'm saying.
His ex-wife is not only his manager; she is executive producer on most of his movies. When they got divorced, she actually, you know, they're still friends. They co-parent, and that's when she started. She saw him in that fairy tale thing on Disney, and she's like, "We have something here." And then she's the one who spearheaded. He's also often said that if it wasn't for her, he wouldn't be where he is right now. And then her brothers. On projects too, he was one of the executive producers for the last movie. I'm sure his daughter's doing some stuff as well. So it's kind of keeping it in the house. And then what I was going to say, stuff that I forgot, is that the people that you grow with, you know what they're capable of.
Yeah,
and they don't want to let you down. Like your true friends or your true associates, they don't want to let you down. Because if you are rising with your production company, therefore, if you have several movies, you're going to use those people because you know that they're going to work and they're not going to cost you money to rework something. So it makes sense.
And... they'll make money, we'll make money, and then, you know, I'll do do some projects and have and use them. They'll do some projects and use me. You know,
it's like teamwork is the key. Exactly. It's always
it's
the
all
key.
What it is. Yeah. It's all what it is.
Yeah, you should, and because in Hollywood, it's like you have somebody, like you were saying in the beginning, you have somebody who says that they can do something, and there's nothing worse mm-hmm. than somebody that they say they can do something, and, then, and one, they don't do it, or two, the worst, they do it, and you're like what is this? What am I supposed to do with this? Exactly. So it's just like, it's way better to, you know, again, if you have good friends or good associates that you know that they're actually going to work yeah. and do the work, and, you know, you don't mind paying them that extra yeah. bump yeah. because
you know what you're going to get. Yeah. You know yeah. the quality you're about
and
to
there's yourself. Also this other amazing thing that's happening right now in the world is that we have amazing stories. Yeah. People like us, we have amazing stories mm-hmm. that haven't been told yet. Mm-hmm. They're starting to get told.
Yeah.
But now we're telling, we're like, we're
and we
like,
can hey, tell them regardless.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got it. Yeah. We're going to tell our own story. Yeah. Like, I know you think you know yeah. what but you don't. But you don't, but you actually don't. So I feel like that was another reason why I was like, you know what? Like, I have a good story. Mm-hmm. I can think of great people and stuff like that. Let's tell these stories.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. One, do you have plans or do you now go back into your community, whether it's in Florida or Cuba, and are doing something athletic-wise? Or in the stories that you tell, I'm assuming it's not going to be, you know, the stereotypes that, you know, we see portrayed of us. It's going to be a different light. Like, that's what yeah. I like about a lot of the shows that are on now in the movies. It's like you see, I'm going to say for black women, you're not mm-hmm. seeing the angry black woman.
Yes. Yeah,
you're seeing that's different so faces of them. Like, they could be this, they can be that, and it's not a stereotype of it. Yeah. So, you know, one, are you doing anything athletic-wise for the kids? And then two, like, what are your projects, like, kind of looking like?
I always try to get back and like, even if it's literally just to like visit kids and help out with anything, like I don't really like to like charge or anything, especially mm-hmm. when you're dealing with like kids, because honestly that's the reward, and it's not even a reward for me, it's for them, because mm-hmm. that's really what it is. So I try not to make the like those little things I do like public. Because
right.
Again, I don't do it so that people be like, oh, did you see the thing? No, like I do it for them, you know? And so, yeah, I do try and help out, because I remember when I was growing up and I was watching and I was like, man, like I want to be that, like that person. Mm-hmm. And I remember at one point, I think it was after 2011, that I was telling my mom that. I was like, yeah, it was so crazy. Like, you know, I was able to compete with like these people that I like watched and I wanted to be like, and she was like, you realize that you're one of them now, right? And I was like, whoa.
Yeah, because you know, people are watching you yeah. wanting to be like you. Yeah.
And then when I see these little kids like come up to me and they like, you know, you see it in their faces, mm-hmm. you're just like, wow, like I want to do this more for people like that, you know
yeah.
what I mean?
And especially coming from Miami, because like they're seeing themselves in yeah, you. They actually see someone that looks like exactly. them, yeah.
Which is not, hasn't been the case. And so, of course, we're not saying that, you know, it's going to be like, trying to take over certain things, but it's just nice to see.
But it's not yeah. about that. It's about representation. Exactly. And I mean, it's so funny and so coincidental that the stories that have been told, like Get Out mm. and Black Panther and all of these amazing stories with people of color have like, what, 99% on Rotten Tomatoes and mm-hmm. things yeah. like that. You know, it's like these stories that from people that look like us are obviously, they will make money.
Right. Yeah.
And and we believe that they're a true reflection of us, and that's right. why we're like, oh, this is what yeah. a great story.
Yeah. Exactly.
I relate to this.
Or the underlining where, I love it with Get Out, when I went like with a multicultural uh-huh. bunch of people that were in the studio or in the audience, and it's like all the black folks or the minorities are laughing at certain things because, you know, we know.
Yes.
And yeah. then the white folks are laughing they're at something like, else, huh? And I'm like... yeah, like, you know, it's just one of those things that, like, yeah. Of course, like what I was asking you if your mother cooked for you. It's like one of those things that if mm-hmm. you're from an immigrant family,
yeah. mm-hmm.
your story, your American story is always slightly different than yeah. from somebody who, even whether they're black, white, or whatever, like born and raised two or three generations.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
it's always a slightly different story. And, you know, the immigrants are not necessarily represented because, you know, exactly. somebody's trying to kick us out.
And are you going to plan to tell your story, because it's a pretty inspirational story,
mm-hmm.
And so play yourself?
I have two different ideas. Like yeah. I was on this dance show.
Mira
Que En Baila?
Yeah, exactly. Ah. On YouTube.
He was so proud. He was so proud.
So while I was on that show, I had a friend of mine kind of just film like the behind the scenes. Mm. So that's one of the things that we have in development. Like, I just kind of had, like, the behind-the-scenes where I was kind of telling what was going on. I was telling why I retired. I was telling what I'm doing now.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of making like a docu-series. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things. And then the other thing is a secret I'm not going to talk about.
The porn will be out in August.
Girlfriend.
Who knows? She might be featuring. She's like, no, UCLA.
But there was, there was something I was going to say, and I'm losing it right now. Dude, see, I'm sitting close.
Docu-series. Secret you can't tell. Yeah.
What were dancing? We talking about before?
Oh, telling your own story. The story you're going to tell your own
yes,
story.
Yes, that. Thank you.
But like a fictionalized, or not fictionalized, but
yes, actually, it's kind of the story. Yes, that's kind of the secret. But anyways.
Oh.
cut.
No, but it's good because he figured it out. I didn't say it. Okay. The thing is that like my story, is very unique and it's very like inspirational. My mom at 27. Took my sister and I out of Cuba by herself with the help of my grandparents who were in Miami.
Yeah.
And, you know, like we like forged documents and we flew to Peru and we were only supposed to be there a week. We ended up staying 6 months, finally somehow got to the United States. But that story, it's different from a lot of immigrant stories, mm-hmm. but it's still a story that is relatable. Like mm-hmm. there's yeah. still so many people in this country that'll be like, oh yeah, my mom also, or mm-hmm. my dad also, you know,
yeah.
like,
yeah.
And that's super important because if we can tell stories like that, people, first of all, people are, we're actually going to know who we are.
Mm-hmm. I think we're going to humanize the story, exactly. like humanize people that we sometimes demonize.
Yeah. Well, I think being in immigration half the day today, people don't realize that the process through immigration is not as easy as people think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You just don't fill out some paperwork and then mail. Yeah, they still do mail. Yeah. Like, yeah. mail it in, and then you wait for 5 years, and then
you...
Yeah, 2018. You wait for 5 years, and then, you know, may or may not... It's not a straightforward process, yeah. and I don't think people understand
process,
it. Yeah, and then even, you know, you talk about DACA and the Dreamers and stuff like that. It's just kind of like, okay, you know, they did a skit. I don't know if you guys saw SNL, but it was the perfect skit. It was like a board game life, and there was a DACA version, and she was a dreamer, and it's like, okay, well, you're a dreamer, they want to send her back to Honduras, and in that process you don't have papers to work, but we need you to find money to pay for a lawyer, and if you can't do that, then it's just yeah. all these loopholes yeah. and it's just kind of like, okay, I understand you want people to do it the right way, but
we don't even talk about all the things you have to do to even be qualified as a
right.
DACA enrollee. You know, mm-hmm. school and how many years, no
yeah.
background checks.
Under 30 yeah. and all this stuff,
so
yeah.
A litany of things, but I think that's a reflection of where we are in the country, and I think mm-hmm. part of it is going to be the artistry that we tell, because I think
yes.
the arts and entertainment industry are kind of leading the broader sort of
yes.
awakening.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely.
I think a lot of times we tell these stories through art and people go, oh, I understand
yeah.
now.
Absolutely. There's at least a little, like you could never, like for instance, I can never be in your position, mm-hmm. but there's at least an empathy there.
Right.
And that's what I think we all as a human race mm-hmm. currently in America is mm-hmm. lacking at the moment.
Yeah.
So it's like, you
and
know.
And you know, I don't know if that's necessarily true because I do hear a lot of these sort of stories of empathy. But
we're in LA,
the other
though.
Stories tend to be a little bit louder. And, no, and then you don't know just because like the people on my Twitter feed are the people I like.
Yeah. You know? LA is a different, LA is a...
But the good thing, I don't know if you guys saw the interview that Jay-Z did with Dave
oh, yeah.
Letterman.
No, yeah.
I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, it's so
yeah.
good. Yeah.
Where he kind of spoke about that it's, you know, it's kind of good that we're in this position right now
mm-hmm.
that a lot of people in the world, you know, they're like with the times and we see the people who are not and we can
yeah.
like call
mm-hmm.
them out and be like, oh, okay, obviously you aren't up with the times. That's good, but we do need to somehow, I guess, help them understand.
Bring them
like,
to the times with
yeah.
us, right?
Because, you know, at the end of the day, it's not... If we just, like, get angry at them for not knowing, like,
yeah.
that's... We're basically doing the same thing there.
Right.
Yeah.
We need to definitely educate them and,
yeah.
and help them understand. I
yeah.
know some people aren't going to want to understand.
Right.
Yeah.
And then we can just not talk about
yeah.
to them at
yeah.
all.
Yeah. But just to pretend like it's whether it was your family member
yeah,
that got
exactly.
shot or
yeah.
your family member that is in like about to be deported.
Exactly.
Like,
sometimes I think it's a little bit of both sides having to press the reset button. Sometimes,
exactly.
like for me, I know sometimes I'll come to a situation with my baggage from my past,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
so you have to say, wait, even though they're ignorant, let me be have grace for that ignorance,
mm-hmm.
rather than bring in the ignorance I've experienced the last 20
right.
years and go, hey, all on
yeah.
you. You know?
I always just say, I'm just gonna say you're having a bad day. Like I'm
yeah.
just for your sake and my sake, I'm just gonna give you that L, like you're having a bad day.
Because
yeah. It's not. It's sometimes it's not even worth it. Like it's you. Yeah, it's definitely an understanding. But with stories like yours, you know, again, it'll put it out there and hopefully it'll.
And how much of the story is over because you've done so much at such a young age? So you could, you don't go to 2020, but could you be there, like, 2024, 32?
No, no, no. God, no.
Right,
no,
because you'll still be young. Tom Brady's 40. You know, no, you'll still be young.
Gymnastics is insanely hard. But I will be at the 2018 Youth Olympics an athlete role model.
Oh, yes. Nice.
Okay, I got selected, and it's actually really amazing because that's something, you know, that you can be a part of that's kind of like a full Olympics, just, you know, for younger people, and you can help make this impact. You can help, I guess, shape people and kind of just experience and be a part of seeing who's going to be who, you know what I mean? And that's amazing, and I can't wait, especially since it's in Buenos Aires in Argentina.
Oh, nice. Oh,
gosh.
Like, I mean, well, yeah.
Why not?
Yeah. There's beaches there.
Let me go down. What can I do? Can I help? I'll volunteer.
No, but the thing, too, is the great thing about, again, I'm pushing the athletics again, but the great thing about that is the lessons that we've learned and then we take it to other places. Now you can instill in other people. And whether they choose to listen or not, I always believe that because you got to that platform, you might say 10 things to them and one thing might stick. And that's all they really need to take it to the next level, or that'll take them to a different part in their life and they're going to remember you for that. Yeah. So that's definitely a great thing.
Absolutely.
And speaking of kids, you're going down to Broadway Loves Parkland on Monday, right? You'll be in Fort Lauderdale.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Yeah, it's a... it's a benefit concert for the Parkland survivors. Like you said, it's called Broadway Loves Parkland, and it's like, I think it's like 15 Broadway stars. It's a very successful Broadway producer who's putting it together, and I was lucky enough to be invited to that, and I'm really excited.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's a whole...
that's a whole other story. Whole other interview.
Yeah.
So we can find you and look for your updates on your Instagram, or is there a website? Where can they like get all
on
your
Instagram
updates?
Instagram, for sure. On Twitter. On Twitter, what I mostly do is just kind of retweet The Daily Show.
Yeah.
Because it's amazing.
Oh, my gosh. I love Trevor.
Learn a lot, honestly. Yeah. You actually learn a lot. Or like, jokes, maybe. Mm. Or I'll, like, say... so, like, I think last night I posted a tweet that said, have you guys seen Queer Eye on Netflix?
Yeah,
oh my god,
it.
It's amazing. I literally cried every single episode.
So it's like another This Is Us?
Kind of.
No,
nice.
Can't,
can't take the emotional
too much,
No, but like in a good way.
Yeah.
Like, it's happy tears.
I'm gonna watch it. I'm gonna tweet you that I'm gonna have a problem.
Yeah.
Bet. After the first episode, she's gonna be like, oh my god. Bet. So but yeah, and I was like watching it, and I was like, oh man, when Tan said,
is his girlfriend on the screen?
When Tan said that the Crocs were the hideous things he's ever seen, I was like, oh wow, amazing, I'm so happy. So that's kind of the things, the stupid things that I tweet, but mainly Instagram.
Yeah.
Not so much Facebook. I don't go on Facebook.
Well, it's all for old people.
Exactly.
And how are you navigating this world of everything you tweet or say could be scrutinized? Have you had like a chilling effect with what you put out there in the last few years or no?
Not in the last few years, but when I was training, they were super strict about like, oh, so like you can't do this and you can't do that. And now I don't care because I consider myself an activist, and there's a lot of things that I will put out on purpose to make people talk about, you know? And it's important. Like, I posted for the Equal Pay Day, I posted like 2 or 3 different pictures about like the actual difference, and it's so funny, so many people would like DM and be like, is this real, is this true? And I'm like, yeah, man. Yeah,
that's awesome. Yeah. Getting out education.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy.
Well, we are so thankful that you were able to join us here. We're so looking forward to your projects.
Thank you so much.
My name is Shaka Smith. You guys can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat at Shaka Strong. Where could they find you? Miss TK Trinidad.
You can find me everywhere at TK Trinidad. You can also catch me on TMZ talking some ish. Oh my god, I have a really good story to tell you guys tomorrow, so definitely tune in to TMZ for sure.
Why didn't you call me and bring me here tomorrow? I'm Donna Leyva. Thank you so much, and we are signing out from Black Hollywood Live.
Yes. On that note, goodbye, guys. See you next week.
We'd like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us. info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us @BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio. Instagram it, at KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in.
Hollywood Redefined.
The views expressed here are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.